Paul.
Hi, Lydia. Hi, everyone.
How is the energy today?
The energy? It's all right. It's all right.
Is it right?
Yeah. It's all right. It's good. I was going to say, welcome to the Wandering Tech Podcast. I'm trying to be high energy, right? Look, I'm trying to not be where I actually... So I'm almost a month on from the ultra marathon, and I haven't done the thing that you're supposed to do, which is apparently for every mile that you run, you're supposed to take a day of rest. I've not done that.
Okay.
So I've like been training. Like, I was like, hey, like last night, I was like, hey, let's go and swim a kilometer, because why not? Not like in one go, right? Casually, yeah, like broken up into like chunk over an hour. I don't want to give the impression that I'm now like this super swimmer, because I'm absolutely not. I am in the slow lane, and I am watching all of the people who are twice my age plus 10. Going up and down and up and down and up and down. And I'm like, yeah, but you've been doing it for longer than I've been alive, and you've been doing it like 3 times a week. But genuinely though, I'm like, hey, look, you know, it's a reminder, and it's why I even do this kind of stuff. Is 5 years ago, I went and watched a friend of mine do a triathlon, and I watched people in their 60s and 70s finishing it. And I was like, I have no excuse to not do this thing. If they can do it, the only thing would be time. Okay, that's gonna be my only caveat, is at that age I feel like you have time to train. Not a luxury I have a huge amount of.
No, your excuse has been considered and filed away. But I have a very similar feeling watching folks that are, you know, and it's quite sad as someone like approaching 30 to see folks, like you said, like double your age plus 10, be absolutely incredible, you know, physicality wise, and you're sitting here and you spend 5 hours of your day sitting on the chair coding, which was also fun, but also maybe not the best for my overall health.
And then I heard that standing desks aren't even good anymore, and I was like, but I was told that was just going to make my problems better.
No, don't tell me that. No, that's not true. I know, as someone who is a big fan of standing desks, obviously I don't use a standing desk when you and I record, but my like main station, I would say, where my PC is at, it is a standing desk, and I have a walking pad and everything. Like, I'm a full-on, like, you know, I'm that person. And it has made a difference. It genuinely does make a difference. Well, maybe it doesn't help and fix everything. And I'm not expecting it to be the magical bullet, because there is no magical bullets. There's just bullets. And I have felt a difference. And also, like, since my partner did the same, he got a standing desk as well. And when he wasn't doing any working out whatsoever, it really did help. It genuinely, there is some benefits. It's better than nothing.
I like my standing desk. Caveat, I like it. I'm just, you know, there's always someone who's going to tell you that whatever the good thing is that you're doing is bad. That's for
everything.
Yeah, I know it is. I know.
It's practically everything. Like, you know, staying indoor is bad, but going outside is also bad. Like, sitting down is bad, but also standing up is really bad. But also, like, you know, not moving is great, but also moving is quite bad. It's like, just shove it.
exercise, but just the right amount, but not too much, but not too little.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's like, I've had people, like, so I got back into running, as I mentioned to you, and... Like, I've had people, and it was mostly because I realized that for, like, my, like, it is, oh, this is such an incredibly, like, I sound like an old lady now. Like, I had a foot injury. So, obviously, like, as I was trying to resolve that, I was like, okay, I'm going to do the one thing that I know is going to be really intensive for that foot, because it feels like one of those things that if I just use it more, it's going to be fine. And lo and behold, it is much better now that I've started running again. And I've had people turn around and going, like, oh, yeah, but no, you shouldn't run because it's bad for your, like, for your joints. And I'm like, I'm 28. It's fine.
I have a colleague who is into cycling, and he's like, oh, I don't run because my parents ran and now they have bad knees. And I'm like, you don't tell me that stuff. I run long distances.
No, objectively, cycling is better for your joints. Objectively. Yeah. If you have the tennis, if you have the, what was it called? Like, you're predisposed to having joint problems, maybe go into cycling. And honestly, let me go back to Denmark and I will do cycling instead of running. But like, the UK is not friendly for cycling. And mountain biking, I'm pretty sure, which is the only alternative really that I have for cycling, for normal cycling here. I'm pretty sure that's also not incredibly healthy, judging by the incredible crash that both me and my partner had a couple of years back.
Yeah, I mean, my other kind of favoured, it doesn't feel like exercise, it's a sport, it's whitewater kayaking, which is just, like, on so many levels.
That is so dangerous.
So dangerous.
Many levels.
And it just sounds so stupid. And I think it was when over a decade ago, a colleague at work came up to me and he said something like, oh, I hear you also like to throw yourself down rivers in a small bit of plastic with nothing between you and the water. And I was like, yeah, that's what I do. I want to have a stick in my hand. Like, yeah. I'm in some molded plastic holding a stick of carbon fiber. Like, that's basically it.
Nothing too extreme is good. Like, my preferred weapon of choice when it comes to, like, ruining myself has been badminton for many years. Yeah. I have a myriad of problems that have caused by, and people would say, like, badminton? Really? It's like, yeah, really. Because not only does it ruin your wrists, because it's a main part of that, it ruins your knees, it ruins your feet, it ruins everything, because it's such an intense, like, burst of energy that you need to have whilst you're actually playing. Plus, you sometimes face head-on, literally, a shuttlecock that is moving over 100 kilometers per hour, and it may actually cause concussions, which I have felt personally. And it was the funniest thing to say, and I most likely will have to blip this out, but I did get concussed by a car. So, yeah.
On that note...
Welcome to the Wondering Tech Podcast. If you haven't been around before, this is what you're getting. Let's talk about solutions.
The chief solutions of... Well, not just... the chief solutions officer, but and not just solutions. And I'm conscious for folks listening, if you're not familiar, I'm gonna try and give a bit of a précis into what we're gonna get into today. Where Lydia and I both sit in the pre-sales/sales engineering, which is probably the most commonly used in legacy terms for the area of work. There has been a discussion. There is always a discussion, and I kind of feel like. This is a discussion that it can never end because it now feels so fundamental to our entire identity, which is, what should we even be called? And there was probably like 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, there was an article put out, co-written by Pre-Sales Collective and Viven, making the case for solutions. So Pre-Sales Collective, a community for pre-sales professionals, and Viven is a vendor in the space. And there was this, it was an interesting sort of approach, and I've gone back and forth on it. And it was this idea that, okay, we shouldn't be talking about sales engineering is a protected term, pre-sales doesn't really describe what we do, yes, okay, solutions should be describing what we do, and we should be solutions consultants. And it never quite sat right with me because, again, it felt a little bit too kind of vague, but then I also kind of came around to the thing of going, doesn't matter what we're called, what matters is what we do. That is not what we're talking about.
By the way, just for side notes, like, so I also had to have a sit down and figure out, like, what is my preferred method of actually describing us, especially as a content creator, especially as someone who, like, talks to many people about these topics. I had to, like, sit down and actually make a conscious decision of which is the terminology I will be using going forward, because otherwise the waters get muddy really quickly. So it's interesting you said that from your perspective, solutions consultant is quite a vague term, because that was the one I chose. Because same as you, I don't particularly like, even though, like, I myself was called a solutions engineer during my time at VMware, there is something when you say engineer that definitely leans more towards the technical side. Same thing as architect, for me, an architect as well, and coming in from a networking world, an architect is someone who is very technical. And the word solutions is just something that, it's a given, right? We are, you know, we're not talking about products. We're not a product engineer. We are talking about overall, you know, how it is whatever we're selling, positioning with everything else that the customer is having. That's why we're talking about solutions. We're not talking about a single point of technology. We're talking about the connections between the technology we're offering or technologies we're offering and the technologies being used by potential prospects and customers. The one thing I can't get away from, and it's a little bit of a victim of its own success, pre-sales is very sticky. It's incredibly sticky as a term. So every single time I talk to someone new that I haven't spoken to before within the space, and that happened actually yesterday, they use the term pre-sales. So even though I don't particularly like that as a term, because it's quite isolationist, it's like we are just there pre-sale, mm-hmm. and not after, not during, not, you know, nothing like that. So it's quite, again, it's pushing us into a specific corner. That is a term that people know. So I ping-pong between the two or use them interchangeably quite often. But I have intentionally dropped solution engineering as a term, which is hard, because again, like, it's an ongoing conversation, and I don't know if we really need it. And to your point, it's more important what we do than what we're called, but at the same time, you need to be able to look up something on Google.
You do. But I dispute that there is this identity crisis, which...
Oh, no. I agree.
Yeah. And I think that's where there's this idea that when you say there's an identity crisis, my kind of problem with that is it implying that people don't really know what their purpose is. People have a very good idea of what they think their job is. What is divergent is what that job specifically entails between, say, one company, between a startup to a massive multi-billion dollar enterprise and everything. Yeah.
Do you think that disjointness of... There are folks, you know, there are conversations around that identity is sort of caused a little bit by the difference in approach from coming in from the field perspective and coming in from a leadership perspective. Because one of the things you and I want to talk about today is this title of Chief Solutions Officer. And in my humble opinion, it's people in the field actually doing the work as pre-sales, as solution consultants. To your point, they have a very clear idea of what their goal is and what their values are. They know what they do day in and day out. I think in the process of trying to create this, and I hate to use it in term, but there's no better term for it, to create this seat on the table for us within the C-level suite, you can't, seemingly, it's not enough just to cover the solutions consultant / pre-sales team. You need to have more level of responsibility to feel like you're actually contributing back to the business to then receive a seat at the C-suite table. And I think... my personal opinion is that that's where that little bit of distractness comes from. You feel people know what they're doing. Leadership obviously trying to have more influence, which is not a bad thing, right? No. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Trying to have more influence, trying to have a better view and a solutions consulting approach to a C-level role are trying to encompass things that I'm not sure should live together.
Yeah, and I'm increasingly coming around to this idea. And as someone who's previously... sort of bang the drum for, let's get a seat at the table. But why are we trying to fight for a new position when actually the kind of the view that I've come around to really is that position, the position already exists in the enterprise model. Well, it kind of exists in two. You have the chief revenue officer, the CRO, and then you have the chief customer or some derivation of that. And I think that really, it's one of those two. The CRO is the kind of more natural fit. And I think this is where you said, yeah, pre-sales is this sticky term because it's a sales role. And I think a lot of the identity challenges come from this desire to move away from or distance ourselves from it being a sales role. The reality is everyone's in sales. You work with customers, everyone's. And, you know, to quote Chris White in front of the podcast in the opening to his book, when people asked him what he did when he was working in pre-sales, he said, I'm in software sales. Which is now my default answer. And I think it's that piece. So you kind of go, my thing is, why are we trying to fight to create a new position when that position arguably already exists? And actually, rather than us trying to create something wholly new, it's actually about reconfiguring what should that CCO, CRO role encompass. And quite often, you know, I roll up to the CRO. And solutions consulting, sales engineering, call it what you like. This role needs to sit within the sales organization in a company to work because it is the primary goal of it is to increase sales velocity. And yeah, there's lots of other things that come off of that. And if you're someone who's selling things, you want to be selling solutions that are going to be implementable, sticky, renewable, particularly the SaaS world, going to be successful. For all these reasons, so that's kind of that's where I kind of sit, where I have more challenge. And I think so. That's kind of my take. What I am also having trouble with, and I'm interested, particularly as well from your perspective, you kind of came from infrastructure, is this notion that the chief solutions officer. Let's say we're going to get rid of chief customer or CRO. We're going to make it chief solution, and they're going to be the person who owns the revenue organization. That includes all of the kind of parts of the revenue. And I don't see how I can see how you can have that under one kind of exec leadership. What I don't see is how you can then have that be a combined role in the company.
Yeah. So from my experience, and again working for VMware, which was a humongous company when it came to the pre-sales force that we had. So we didn't have a C-level person. The highest we had was a VP. So, and we all were shuffled practically within the sales organization. We didn't have customer success who was underneath a different organization. And I think that was a very, we had influence in the sense of, you know, we weren't, as I think a lot of folks are afraid and worried about, like we weren't subservient to the sales team in any way, shape or form. But we are within sales. To your point, we are tech sales. this is what we do. So it made sense that our general direction obviously would be alongside with our sales counterparts. And the overarching responsibility for sales to continue to happen within the organization was under sales leadership, going up to all the way up to chief revenue, chief financial officer, etc., etc., right? You know, the people who care about the money coming in and money coming out. We had enough influential leaders within the pre-sales organization to be able to vouch for us, or put forward what is the value that we... But I think it's a little bit different within infrastructure companies, because there is no question around the benefits and the value of the technical people. Infrastructure companies tend to be tech-heavy companies, aka like engineers are put in, you know, first place. There is no company without the engineers. I'll be curious to hear your experience from, you know, coming in more from the SaaS world, but there was never a question around what is the value of these people, you know, coming in and being technical, but also being able to talk to people. That was never a question. So we never had to, like, quote unquote, vouch for ourselves or like keep on providing value or proving our value more like it. So there wasn't really that divide or that necessity to have someone to be on that seat to push forward our own agendas and our own perspectives. I think it was important from a VMware's perspective, it was important for them to have then customer success and support and enablement and everything else to be underneath another vector, because then it's not sales driven. Because at the end of the day, whilst we're not, you know, we don't like to think of ourselves as coin operated, we are being rewarded in a certain way. Yeah. You know, you are getting more money the more deals you go through. Yes, our role is not just to get the sale in. That is the difference between us and, you know, our sales counterparts, who need to be driven, that need to push, that need to be like that sort of driving force. We need to be the counterbalance to that a little bit. Whilst I very much appreciated working with customer success folks that were not aligned with that, because that allowed them to have completely different values and completely different perspectives to me. We need to spend more time with this customer because X, Y, and Z. That was completely different from my ABC. You know, it's not just about revenue. For them, was about making sure that folks are happy, making sure that the technology is actually being used. And there was a lot of cross-pollination, don't get me wrong, especially, you know, with the customer CSP folks that I was working with. And there was a common goal, especially as we switched over, to your point, towards subscription and renewable licenses. That was it almost felt like a natural change that didn't need to be enforced in that way of having like, okay, no, all of us need to work together on this, under just one big banner of solutions,
yeah,
to be able to then position that forward. Same for enablement, same for anything else. The only challenge, and I think I've spoken about this on the podcast before, the only challenge was that it was other teams that were not really engaged with us on that level, and maybe a C-level person would have been able to resolve that, you know. But and what I mean here is like marketing folks, you know, if we're talking about a go-to-market role, like from what I understand, as a chief solution officer is, you know, we're looking at the whole go-to-market motion, maybe that would have resolved that connection between us and the marketing team. Maybe. I don't know. And at the end of the day, it didn't really matter in the grand scheme of things for that particular company. I think infrastructure / very, very deeply technical companies have less of that problem than new, you know, up and coming, not only startups, but just like SaaS companies that are working toward a specific function and feature and not fundamental technological infrastructure that people need. It's not about convincing folks that this is a nice thing to have. It is about, you need this. It's either us or the competitor.
Yeah.
And I think that conversation is a little bit different from, oh, we can save you X amount of money by using this product, or we can improve your customer retention with this SaaS product, or we can do this, or we can do that. That was a very long-winded way to answer that. I don't think the chief solution officer was really required,
yeah,
within an organization such as VMware. There wasn't a lack of support. There wasn't, as a field person, there wasn't lack of support. I don't know if it was different from a leadership perspective, as I was never in that role within VMware. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But from a field perspective, we felt supported. We felt like we knew what we were doing. We felt like we had, you know, people were listening, and we did have an impact. But that might have been also a effect of, we were a engineering focused company. Engineers were top of the food chain, so to say. Yeah. There wasn't a question there around what is valuable. So yeah, that's really my experience from being from the infrastructure side of things.
It's super interesting. So I should say that a lot of what you were saying resonated with me, and my experience in SaaS is interesting because I've kind of been in both pure SaaS, the like here is a thing that you can operate your business without this product. I've also been in the kind of space, pretty much like you said with infrastructure, where it's either us or the competition. You have to pick one. You can't operate your business without this, or there is this capability that we provide is essential to the operation of your organization. So you're kind of having a different kind of conversation there. And I think there are really with more, the more so pure SaaS side is less of a, it's us or the competition. It's us or continue doing this thing in a way that's not as efficient. So it's more about efficiency and driving efficiency and value. I think interesting from a leadership perspective, and you know, my experiences in leadership is that there isn't a lack of understanding at the C-level about what it is that pre-sales, what this function does. I think it's well understood. The role of the function is well respected. It's seen as being critical to a successful sales go-to-market machine. But I think also, and something you mentioned about customer success and, you know, the different priority in a SaaS and subscription-based world, it all comes back ultimately to revenue. And yes, you're incentivized differently and you're kind of, the way that you engage is different. But it all comes back to how do you continue to maintain your existing customers? How do you grow your install base? And how do you then subsequently go and kind of go and win new business? And it all sort of sits. It's all circular. I think again, perpetual world, right? It was different. Okay, it was, you weren't going back to the well every year or whenever the contract came up saying, hey, renew, we need to get some more money from you, etc. So that, and realistically, customer success didn't exist in a perpetual software world, like software wise.
Not really, no. It was definitely a support function. That sort of like aftercare was,
yes,
you know, landed in the hands of the support folks.
Yeah, it wasn't what it is now, which is about value realization and continuing to ensure the customer is happy. And there's a great book on kind of practical sides of customer success that we'll link in the show, and it kind of goes through they have their I think it's 10 laws of customer. Really, it gets quite detailed, and I would say you don't have to. It's not a cover to cover read. I did an audiobook. But it's interesting, I think, if you want to understand the model of customer success in the bigger picture of SaaS company. Now, when you read that, you think, well, actually, rather than the chief solutions officer, well, should it be the chief customer officer? Should it be, because actually, what brings revenue into the business? Customers do. So your role is really about looking after all the customers. And going back to what I was saying about being leadership, like, I have not ever felt like I've needed to advocate the importance of pre-sales to leadership. They understand the importance.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do need to do as a leader is advocate how you're being efficient and effective, which is the same in any role. And just as you were talking, like, I was thinking, if we just take another part of the organization, please, let's take engineering, and you mentioned engineers, and in the software context, and your chief technology officer, your CTO, they are going to own quality, they're going to own development, they may own sort of operations, cloud operations, if you're a SaaS business. They might even own product, or they'll be aligned to, there'll be some kind of alignment there to product. So it's not unusual to have multiple functions with heads of VPs, SVPs of those departments going into a C-suite. And I think it comes back to this, like, it's not about creating a seat at the table, which has become this phrase that has been repeated over and over and over again in the last sort of 5 years. It's actually about, as you say, doing a better job of advocating for what we do and demonstrating how we do that effectively and the impact we have in order to evangelize the importance of our position and justify investment in things like training, in things like software. It's more of that rather than we have to create some other position that will own pre-sales and everything else.
Yeah, I think you've hit the mark there on something around investment. That was a challenge we had. So the idea was that and it might be, I would like to think we were a victim of our own success. It was hard for us to get through. We need tools, we need training, we need specifically for us, because we just did our job right. We just did it well. But I would question if that is the case in most companies, there were two ways to get into a pre-sales role within VMware. One was that you were coming in at a senior level, mm-hmm. or another one, you were coming through the graduate program. And in both of those places, you, the enablement sort of, you either come with it or you, over time, as part of the graduate program, you would achieve those skills anyway in that training.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't really, you know, and looking back at it now, It wasn't like we didn't get any training budget. Like, I got training to do, like, the, you know, speaking of friend of the show, Chris White, like, I got training budget to go and actually do his course. But there wasn't anything sort of a, you know, oh, as a team, we need to be doing this or, you know, or the other, you know, things like that. Did we need it? I want to completely full of myself say that we were a fantastic resource team, so not really. completely selfishly. But that was really, like, you know, looking back at it now, like, yes, I did harp about it, but in reality, we were still doing a good job and we were still very effective as a team. And would something like consensus would have been fantastic to bring in? Absolutely. Did we need it at the time and point that we were at the time? Not particularly. It wasn't a need. It would have been a nice to have, especially for me as someone who was like pushing this idea of like video demos, but not particularly. Like, I would struggle, and, you know, it was one of my last tasks to do, to sort of, like, sit down and write a business case for it. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of struggled with, like, thinking about that through. Again, maybe now, if I was still in that position nowadays, I would have a different approach to it, because we have a lot more numbers and a lot more things that I can point to. But it was a little bit different at the time. Funny, like, actually, very, very interestingly, yesterday I had a conversation with a lady that, so they are looking to hire their first pre-sales person. And they made a very conscious choice of putting them, so there is no pre-sales organization. There's barely a sales organization to start with. So they had three people, salespeople, and they were needing to bring in a technical resource for them. You know, they needed to bring in a pre-sales person. And they made the decision to put that pre-sales person underneath the technical leadership. And I thought that was interesting. And the conversation I had with her, and the thoughts I was having as I was talking to her, is you are making a choice as to where the priorities of this person are. And you need to be aware that that is the decision you're making. Because then they will not be comparing themselves to their sales counterparts or what is the value they can provide to them. This individual that they will be hiring will be comparing themselves to the implementers, to the post-sales people, to the professional services people. And if that is something, and that is the value that you want to, you know, that person to have as a, I am the technical person that can also talk to customers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. I would argue that that is not a true pre-sales role in that case. It is more what I would call in networking world, an architect role. Someone who knows a little bit about everything, is able to put all the pieces together, and is able to then present that back to people. When your value is not completely aligned with getting a deal through, naturally as a person, you do not. I know for myself, like from my own personal experience of, until I made the conscious decision of co-owning my number with my sales counterpart,
mm-hmm.
my behavior was completely different. Mm-hmm. My behavior was purely about being a technologist, aka coming in and making the best decision, you know, specifically for the technology, not, you know, and doing the things that I thought were most interesting from a technological perspective, not really considering, oh, what is the impact of potentially talking to this customer today versus talking to the other customer tomorrow. And that created that friction between me and my sales counterpart
mm-hmm.
until before I decided to make that decision. So, but again, we were under sales as a organization. So that co-owning should have happened very much from the get-go, but it took me a while to get there. But if I was underneath the technical leadership, that would have not been a revelation. That would not be something that I would do. So it was just interesting to consider, like, where you sit within an organization will dictate what is your values as a pre-sales person. You can have the same title, but I think it's more about who are you under versus who you are as a, you know, what does the profession actually call you?
Yeah.
And I want to play devil's advocate a little bit here when it comes to the chief solutions officer role. I've opened up James Kakis' blog post from TestBox, and he has four core pillars of the chief solutions officer role. And I want to first have a little conversation around that. So they're, you know, one, trust, two, customer centricity, three, alignment, and four, value. The trust one I find very, very interesting as a metric, because it wasn't something that actually up until, like, you know, reading through James's like posts, and, like, you know, he's a big proponent of this role, and he's very interesting to read through, like, his thoughts on this. The study that he's quoting here is that 70% of leaders say achieving trust is a strategic business objective. Is this a business objective that you guys have within Loftware that you're familiar with?
Not building trust. And I think it's so, if you think about how you measure success in business, you have metrics. Kind of the key things is you have metrics and you have KPI. And within that, you'll have analysis of your metrics, which will feed into your KPIs, and then you'll be able to look at it. But metrics need to be measurable, right? They need to be clear, defined. I do not know how you measure trust. You measure trust of your company, you measure trust of your product, because you use that to go, well, how is our customer retention, what's our MR, what's our gross retention rate, what's our annual churn, those kinds of things. The kind of things that when you get into real sort of customer success world, you start talking about. But it's not a metric that I've ever seen, and when I've spoken to other pre-sales leaders, that they're going, hey, yeah, you know what, we really measure trust, because you can't measure it. And I think it's interesting, kind of, I'm in the same article, and we've been circling around this whole thing of the CRO, CCO, and his kind of hypothesis here is, the overall goal for the chief solutions officer is to bring solutions expertise to the chief customer officer role. But then, for me, the chief customer officer kind of sits on the side of, like, the customer success piece rather than the revenue piece. So there's... It's a long kind of convoluted way of answering your question, right? But it's like, I don't know how any of those pillars, trust, customer centricity, alignment and value, what metrics you would use to measure those. I can see how they're values that you would have, and they are, you would say, this is what we build our organization, but I don't see how you measure them. And I think that is also the problem when we come back to, and there's one other thing that we'll get into in a minute, which is compensation, which I think leads nicely off of what you were just saying about alignment and ownership of numbers. But where I still struggle with this is that, what do we want this role to be? Is this a technical person who understands sales and is the kind of like the techie salesperson, which is the very old school way of looking at pre-sale? Or is it a salesperson who can clearly articulate and understands the value that the solution delivers? Well, the CRO. So it comes back to this thing of going, I struggle to find what is different about this that doesn't already exist within what existing C-suite roles should have and what existing organizations should have if they want to be successful.
I want to add something to the point, because I've noted down here a quote from the source that James used when talking about trust. So within the, if you actually double click within that, so the quote here is, some of the most important and foundational steps determining how to measure trust, getting buy-in, securing budget, or identifying owners across the organization still remain the most challenging because they're unique to each business. What I'm reading from that is that there is no... Even the folks that came back with a study, because it's not, what is a study? It is a forum where folks were actually, obviously, they're giving in their opinion, and it's quite a rich data set that folks were getting back from. The fact that there is no specific, to your point, KPI that people can say, like, this is what trust is, yet we're positioning it as an important metric for a chief solutions officer role, makes my general opinion of that role is at the moment still very much a goal, a dream, something that we, some folks within the pre-sales world want to achieve, yet we don't really have, because we're in sales, we know this, number speaks mm-hmm. volumes. If you don't have a firm grasp of where that number comes from or how do we measure it, I think that's going to be a fundamental challenge for that role going forward, if that is something that folks want to actually implement within their organizations. I'll be honest with you, like, looking back at my like life within VMware, I don't know if, as a pre-sales proponent, as a pre-sales fangirl, I'm not sure if I would have supported a chief solutions officer role within the organization or have found a way to indicate or describe our need for that role when mm-hmm. everything is so vague, in the sense of there is no specific metric that we can actually use for that. And I think that a very similar thing comes from customer centricity is different, but that is something that we can borrow from our customer success friends. They have this, they have metrics around this. And I think I've read the same book as you, because it does go into a lot of details. And that is something that, it is covered as we have a way that we can focus, we can measure where our priorities lie as a team. Is it towards the customer or is it towards our own goals as a company? Mm-hmm. Alignment and value are also, to me, a little bit vague. What does it mean to be aligned? That means, cross silo collaboration. That means a complete go-to-market unity. Like, we all know we're all on the same page. We're all singing from the same, songbook. But again, measurement. How do you measure that? Do you measure the amount of projects, like cross-collaboration projects? Do you measure? And more importantly, is this not something that someone else can already do that has a C-level title? And my argument is yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Based on previous experiences, like our CTO, like within the UK, within EMEA, he had as part of his responsibility to create and to manage and to push forward a lot of cross collaboration between different teams within VMware. So that now is sort of moved towards that direction. and all companies will have a CTO. That you know, we have a CTO.
Yes, yeah.
Within our own company. So that again, do we really need someone to do that? The other one, value. Okay, that's about translating from, you know, features and functions into value. That is a core mandate or a core requirement for a pre-sales team to be effective.
Mm.
Again, do people on the field need that as a, you know, from a C-level person? Now, I'm not talking about leadership, because yes, leadership is important in this case, because we were getting that from our VP. Right, like, we need to focus on value less on features, and we knew that. Again, what is then the difference between having someone to be at the level of a CRO and having conversation with that CRO to then filter it back down to the actual people on the ground doing this? So really, and I think this is the point where we'll have to reach out to James and have a conversation with him about this, because I would love to hear his take on all of this and actually really try to convince me otherwise, because I'm very open to be convinced otherwise. Because it does sound, let's be honest, it sounds fantastic, the idea of it, right? But at the same time, I immediately put myself in the place where I naturally want to be critical of it, because it is a big step and it's a big change to how businesses operate to have another level like that.
So where I would kind of come with it, and I do want to talk about comp, and I agree, right? I think it would be good to tweet James. I know James well. I think he makes a compelling argument for it. But I come back to having an aligned solutions team, having that aligned role will be fine within a certain type and size of organization. But there is a critical mass beyond which you can no longer have one person carrying all of those things, right? We see it between, you know, like right now we wear multiple hats, okay? And you do, and as a company gets bigger, you have to diverge and divest what those functions are and who those people are. And that's because, and to this will lead us into the comp conversation, to your point, it's a different type of person. The fact that, you know, in VMware you had these sort of two routes into getting into being in pre-sales, similarly kind of in software, right? We've now had more outside in hires purely into a pre-sales role, but for a long time it was literally like, oh well, you kind of do, you're good at doing the services and post-sale, so like, hey, you know what, come and do a demo. And the problem there is that you're trying to merge two very different types of people, and two different types of people who also want to be compensated very different and who are willing to take on a different levels of risk. And I think my biggest challenge whenever, and I always put it to everyone I speak to in pre-sale, whenever they say, I don't get, you know, enough thanks or gratitude, it's there's a clip from the IT crowd when it's like highlighting there's been this massive project delivers, but they forget the IT team, right? And they thank everyone, they thank the toilet cleaners, but they forget the IT team. And I'm like, yeah, that with pre-sale, but you need to be willing to take on the risk. And actually James has put up a really interesting post about this, a lot of which I agree with around compensation. You know, incentives drive behavior, and if you want to be in a position in this career where you're getting the big shiny rewards and the big money that you see you perceive, right, that your sales colleagues are getting, you've got to be willing, not necessarily to carry a bag, right? That's kind of a different thing, and we can debate, should pre-sales carry a bag, should they not, you know, ups and downs of that. But you should absolutely be willing to have a compensation model that reflects accurately the risk. You should be basically, if you want a bigger reward, you've got to be able to take on more risk. And I think that is at the moment for many, many, many people in this profession just too much. They would not, if I turned around to my team today and said, right, I'm going to increase your OTE by say 50%, but you've got to take a 25% cut on your base salary,
there will be
a lot of them wouldn't do it.
I know,
there might be one or two, right?
Yeah.
But would you do that?
I wouldn't do that. Like back in my days at VMware, I would have never sacrificed my base for the sake of more, you know, more tied to my target compensation.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Purely because, again, what is the behavior that you're driving? You don't want your pre-sales people to be so solely focused, so laser focused on revenue. You want them to have a more holistic perspective on the engagement with a specific prospect or customer. And by the way, just going back a little bit on the topic, I do want to highlight the fact that, and I'm not ignoring it, James in the same blog post has outlined a lot of KPIs and metrics around like what would the CSO be actually responsible for, and a lot of them are the things that we are discussing around, you know, ARR, GRR, time to launch, log rotation, you know, renewal rates. I'm having the same, and the reason I didn't mention them as we were talking about the main core pillars is that I don't see the tight and unique perspective that other members of the C-suite can provide to those KPIs. And even and he even highlighted himself a little bit by saying that, you know, when it comes to AIR, a CSO would share this number in partnership with the revenue leadership. Okay, why would you even need a CSO then to be responsible for that number alongside with the CRO or the CFO?
Yeah.
So that is really where my slight pushback on this role. Like, so let me just make sense very clear, you know, coming in towards the end of the episode. Yeah, I want to believe in the CSO from purely selfish perspective of like, you know, oh, we are a big enough deal that we have someone on the C-level. And it's an amazing perspective to be within that sort of type of organization that has that level of leverage. That would be fantastic. And to be more responsible and to have a bigger impact. You know, my goal always within a field role is to have the maximum amount of impact I can have on an organization. But the objective and more critical side of me then turns around and goes like, yeah, but really, what is the unique proposition that you're bringing in here? What is the uniqueness that not other people within that team, the C-level suite, can they not do that you can do and you can breathe? It's the same old question that I ask folks when it comes to like products and everything else. Like, is it a nice to have? It definitely is.
Mm.
Is it a must have? I would question that.
Are you adding or are you replacing? And I think, and I agree, I think there is, again, selfishly for my own career ambitions, right? If I look to a role in the C-suite that I would one day shoot for, CSO, CRO, yeah, right? That's a great role to aim for. And I think it's great that people like Jane, people like Sarah Jones, who come from a more of a technical sales background are now taking on that role. But I still, to your point, I agree that is not a unique position that doesn't already exist in the executive leadership team. It's maybe just a slight reframing of what that person actually does and what kind of pedigree you're looking for when you're hiring into that position. Thank you so much for listening to the Wondering Tech podcast. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. You can find many more episodes in the feed and a lot more about everything else that we do at solutionspathfinder.com. You can connect also with me and Lydia on LinkedIn. We both post there regularly, and we'd love to continue the conversation with you and hear about whether you think the Chief Solutions Officer is the future or if we're all barking up completely the wrong tree. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.